Hi, Xers. Welcome to Market Scope for March 2004. Last month, Dale Hamm and Gary Kettler began the FM dial in Waco, Texas. So here we are to finish up Waco's FMs.
Today's the music, 97.5 FM, Stacey Rico. It's time. Christina Aguilera and Lil' Kim Can't Be Held Down on today's Hit Music 97.5 FM.
Your music, your station. A better variety of today's hit music is on 97.5 FM.
It's awesome.
97.5 FM.
Sunny and windy today, high about 87, 60 overnight, then sunny again tomorrow, the high about 84. Monday and Tuesday, nice and sunny, high about 82.
Today's hit music, 97.5 FM.
This is Darren and Chrissy. Hope you're having a great weekend. Don't forget to join us on the big show Monday morning for Win It Before You Can Buy It tickets.
That's right. Three Doors Down is coming to Waco November the 8th at the Heart Texas Coliseum. We'll have your tickets starting Monday.
Right here on 97.5 FM. We'll see you Monday morning.
Bye. Today's at Music 97.5 FM. Hey, ladies. It's Luke Cantrell. Hit up Skyle on the station. Always giving you the golden tracks first with the latest now from Matchbox 20.
She got it.
Today's Hit Music 97.5 FM.
Central Texas number one music station.
Interactive 975online.com.
97.5. Everything we're advertising. Then stick around for more of today's hit music in 60 seconds.
KWTX, Waco, Tampa, Lee, Fort Hood.
More music!
You want a variety of country music? You got it. Still, the most country music variety is here on Texas number one country. Waco 100.
Waco 100, Texas number one country. Chattahoochee from Allen Jackson.
Central Texas weather.
From Lon Curtis and the Doppler 10 Forecast Center, here's the Waco 100 weather forecast. Mostly sunny today, high near 91. Low tonight about 67. By tomorrow, partly cloudy. A chance we could get some rain. And a little cooler, too. High tomorrow, 84.
Texas number one country. Waco 100.
Waco 100, Texas number one country. That's brand new from Jimmy Wayne. It's called I Love You This Much.
It's finally here, the I Love My Country Waco 100 bumper sticker. Grab it and slap it on. Plus, check out the great coupons from Country Ford in Gatesville and Georgia's, home of the Big O. Show your love of country and love of country music with a new sticker from Waco 100.
Here's what's happening at Waco 100.
Oktoberfest at Morgan's Point Resort. Doesn't that sound like fun? Starts 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 10th. It's sponsored by Morgan's Point Police Officer Support Team. Starts at 10 in the morning and goes until who knows when. There'll be German food and lots more that Saturday, October 10th. Oktoberfest at Morgan's Point Resort.
Texas number one country, Waco 100.
Is Waco 100, Texas number one country. WACO, Waco, Texas. A Clear Channel radio station.
Rock 1025, the man, the bear.
Rock 1025, the bear, Waco's rock station. The classic rock you love and the new rock you need.
Tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, going to feature one of the biggest artists of the 80s
on the classics 2 hours of John Mellencamp. Tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, followed at 10 by 4 hours of flashback here on Bear. A long set of back-to-back Bear tracks minutes away. The rock stops no more than twice an hour.
Ford Motor Credit. All vehicles must be in stock. Country Ford in Gatesville.
KBRQ.
Texas.
Texas.
Waco's rock station is
The Bear.
KWBU-FM Waco, your station for NPR News and more.
KWBU-FM is member-supported public radio.
Thanks to our members, you can enjoy programs like Morning Edition, All Things Considered, A Prairie Home Companion,
Classical Music, Pipe Dreams,
Jazz, This American Life, and Car Talk.
Members of the KWBU Cornerstone Society have given $500 or more in support of programming on KWBU-FM.
Dr. and Mrs. Rodney Ritchie, Mr. and Mrs. Chris Krause, Tom Charlton and Rebecca Sharpless, Mr. and Mrs. Jeff Castleberry, Randy and Diana Ramey, and Jim and Nell Hawkins.
Join the Cornerstone Society with your gift of $500 or more to KWBU. Call 710-7881 or log on to the KWBU website for more information.
www.kwbu.org.
La número uno en música mexicana. La mejor 104.1. La mejor 104.1. La mejor 104.1, la número uno, la número uno en música mexicana. La número uno en música mexicana, la mejor 104.1.
¡Qué buena! 107.9. ¡Pura raza!
107.9. KBOX Robinson Waco. ¡La qué buena! Una estación de Univisión Radio.
Aquí suena la qué buena. 107.9. ¡Pura raza!
Thanks, guys, for letting us sample Waco's radio dial. In future months on Market Scope, Dale Hamm takes us to Austin, Texas. Clark Ingram gives us a radio tour of Pittsburgh. And Tom Bilton will take us to a southern market we really don't hear too much of, Columbia, South Carolina. If you'd like to submit a Market Scope of your area, send it to me, Phil Wayne, 1872 Myers Road East, Marion, Ohio, 43302-8730. And yes, everyone who sends in a Market Scope still gets one of those great radio station jingle CDs. And now, the DX Audio Service presents Musings from the Members.
Musings from Members.
What's on your mind? Do you have some comments to make? Call the DX Audio Service action line at 419-224-1609. 24 hours a day.
This is Tim Hendel responding to Fred's question, why do we think people are spending less time with the radio? Well, first of all, of course, people do have other sources of information and entertainment, such as the Internet, which they simply didn't have before. But more than that, I think, folks, radio is just plain boring. You have people like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck who hammer on at the same thing day after day after day after day. You have rock stations and country stations that play the same limited playlist no matter what city you go to, no matter what station you tune to. There's very little local information anymore that people might want, such as local school sports and news and city council information. So I think radio is committing suicide. It's getting more bland, more generic, and more boring. Is it any wonder that people, especially the younger people, simply stop listening? I don't think so.
Hi, this is Mike Lance in Miami Beach, Florida. We have a new radio station on 1120 in Miami. I think they are a pirate station, though. They call it WLDN, Radio de Marshall Novel, Radio New Dimension. And they simulcast with their FM at 99.5 WLDN. They play religious music and some good music, and they also have some talk shows. And I was wondering, whatever happened to the station at 1560 WAGL in Lancaster, South Carolina? I would be interested in knowing because I used to be able to pick them up down here in Miami, but I can't get them anymore.
This is Paul Burkhart from Watertown, Massachusetts. To answer the question about the reason for the decline of radio listening, it's very simple. The lack of creativity and also the IBOC is a major part of this. It should sound natural for everyone so that it will have everyone wanting to hear the radio at its best.
Hello, DXers.
This is Herbert Newberry calling from Millsville, Georgia. Today is Valentine's Day, February the 14th. At 3 p.m., I observed that WSWK 1690 is now on the air testing from Avondale Estates, Georgia, broadcasting a steady stream of country and western music. So if you're a big fan of the X Band, check out 1690. They're coming in loud and clear here in Milledgeville, Georgia.
Hi, Fred. This is John Mulia outside of Philadelphia, Exton, Pennsylvania. You asked about what we listen to. I about a year ago got XM radio, and what drove me to it was because radio in Philadelphia has gotten so bad that there really is nothing to listen to. I listen to the all news station KYW or WFIL, the Christian talk station, but outside of that, the oldie station plays the same old tired oldies. I don't care whether they go AM, FM, or IBOC or anything else. They've got to improve the program because it's just too bad. I do have a question, though, for some of your members. As someone who's totally blind, I'm finding that more and more devices are unusable for the blind, such as cell phones and other things. You can dial the phone, yes, but all the other services that they bundle into it, you can't use, as along with a lot of radio equipment. I wonder how they feel about it.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. I think a lot of the reasons why some people have stopped listening to the radio as much as because there's too much cookie-cutter stuff going on. There's too much of a sameness, and there's the same thing on too many stations. There's too many stations playing one kind of a format, or certain talk shows have too many stations, and so on and so forth, carrying them. Sorry to hear about Clarence Cordray. He was a very dear friend from my Cincinnati days. I think something that is going on good now is 820 Cham up here. They have recently lost their three longtime disc jockeys. However, they're having some country singers come in now for the next 6 weeks and play DJ, and I think that adds something for people to listen to. It creates interest. I had a couple of great pickups. One on 980 CKNW Vancouver, BC, a few weeks ago. That's only the second station I've ever picked up from that city here. The other one was CKWX about 9 years ago on 1130, and that's a good maybe 3,000 miles from here, so that's really a great pickup. Last Sunday, I picked up a station, 1570, in Danville, Pennsylvania, and I thought that was quite a catch. It's a religious station. The X-Band has been coming up very well, particularly Saturday morning, February the 7th, between 10:30 and 11 o'clock. The whole X-Band was coming in at that time of day, and I thought that was remarkable for broad daylight. I want to mention also, Steve Stewart will be the new announcer for the Cincinnati Reds, who will substitute for Joe Nuxhall this year along with Marty Brenneman and take over full-time with Marty next year. Steve has had good experience before. He's broadcast for University of South Carolina, then he did minor league games in Calgary. He's been on the Baltimore Orioles radio broadcast with Fred Mantra and Jim Hunter the last couple of years. And Van Miller, that was a good tribute that Ken Honestchuk gave to Van, as well as the deceased announcers, Lloyd Pettit and Earl Gillespie. Van will be replaced by John Miller on the Buffalo Bills broadcast next football season.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. If you have something on your mind, something to say, give us a call today on the Action Line. The number is 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service members only. And to answer Mike Lance's question about 1120, whether or not that's a legit station or not, me thinks it's a pirate because there's a 50,000-watt station on in Miami on 1140 WQBA, and that's a little too close, 20 kilohertz away, to have two stations in the same market. So that's probably a pirate station, just another one of those pesky pirates down there in Florida. And here's a little trivia question for you. How many AM radio stations are on the air as of December 31st, 2003? The answer? 4,794. There are 6,217 FM commercial stations and 2,552 FM educational stations. making a total of 13,563 stations, of which half of those are Clear Channel. No, just kidding. As far as television stations, there's a total of 1,733 TV stations on the air. Of Class A, UHF, and VHF stations, 605. Translators, FM translators and boosters, 3,834. UHF translators, 2,663. VHF translators, 2,086. Low-power TV stations in the UHF band, 1,604. And low-power stations in the VHF band, 525. That brings a total of 26,613 radio and TV stations on the air in the United States. How about that? Well, Mike Lance should have some hope on the horizon, at least according to an article in the Palm Beach Post titled "Radio Sleuths Go to Great Wavelengths to Catch Rogues." This is by Elliot Kleinberg, Palm Beach Post staff writer, dated Monday, February 9th, 2004. Pirate radio stations, beware, you're being watched. Legitimate stations plagued by the outlawed transmitters that fuzz up their signals complain regularly that the Federal Communications Commission has neither the staff nor the streamlined process to shut down the dozens of pirate stations scattered across South Florida. Some stations send out their engineers with special equipment to pinpoint stations. Now they're getting some help. Ham radio operators, computer programmers, broadcast consultants and engineers, and other citizen sleuths also fed up with the pirate interference are tracking down the outlaws themselves. Pirate stations operate with no federal broadcast license. A transmitter can cost as little as $5,000. Since 1997, the FCC has shut down more than 400 in Florida alone. South Florida is believed to have more than any region in the country. Operators face federal fines and prison terms, but the Federal Communications Commission must bring in federal authorities, and the operator has to be caught in the act. The Florida Association of Broadcasters is working to introduce legislation next month that would make operation a violation of state law, giving local authorities jurisdiction too. Business partners Lou Venzel and Stephen Gray of Broward County use equipment similar to the LoJack stolen car homing device to track pirate stations to their front doors and estimate their levels of interference. The two have sent detailed reports and photographs of pirate transmitter antennas to the Federal Communications Commission, but have yet to receive any reply. Gray said recently, "The agency, as a policy, will not confirm or discuss any ongoing investigations." Another pirate hunter who did not want to be identified said that he has contacted landlords to remind them that their leases have clauses about illegal activities or that pirates violate building codes by mounting transmitter antennas. Gray recently tracked 17 pirate stations in 2 hours in the Miami-Dade County area. He and Venzel estimated more than 60 operating in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, and a new one goes on the air every week. Many pirates don't interfere with legal broadcasts because they pick dial locations far enough between licensed stations or transmit on very low power or low quality equipment. A few have equipment that prevents them from interfering. But most pirates don't know they're interfering or don't care, Venzel said. Sometimes a new pirate station begins interfering with an established one, which jacks up its power to try to drown out the newcomer in a twisted form of Darwinism. It's like a war, Venzel said. Venzel and Gray have created their own business to battle pirates. Clients can hire Signal Finder Incorporated to pinpoint anything interfering with radio transmissions. That can include cordless telephones, wireless internet signals, power line interference, illegal bug transmitters, taxicab two-way radios, even fast food through communication systems, and pirate radio stations. Venzel says that he has signed up radio giant Clear Channel Communications and has inquiries from other operations. Armed with evidence, stations don't have to rely solely on the FCC, but can pursue the pirates with a civil suit. If you're a parent like myself, you may be uncomfortable with what your children are listening to on the radio. A lot of kids listen with their headphones, and it's kind of impossible to hear what they're listening to. And sometimes, you know, kids can be secretive. But even if you're not a parent, I know a lot of people who just don't want that radio to be on when people visit them because they're not quite sure what may be coming out of the speaker. It seems that times may be changing, and if you're like myself and would like to see them change even more, perhaps you need to turn up the heat. What am I speaking about? Well, it's been no secret that the halftime show at the Super Bowl has kind of gotten some people fired up over indecency in broadcasting. And in fact, Bubba the Love Sponge has been fired from Clear Channel. Clear Channel has also cut loose Howard Stern. And legislators are starting to get into the act. The House Telecommunications Subcommittee voted unanimously to approve legislation that would crack down on broadcast indecency by ratcheting up the fines for off-color programming. Now, under this legislation, the cap for a fine for a single instance of indecency would go up from $27,500 to $275,000, and the maximum levy for continuing series of violations would rise from $300,000 to $3 million. Why are they raising the fines? Well, many of the big broadcasters and corporate stations say that $27,500, well, that's a drop in the bucket. That's just the cost of doing business. But subcommittee members have made it clear that they intend to further beef up the measure in the next several weeks before it reaches a vote in the House floor. And members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee unveiled several amendments that they intend to introduce into legislation. Now, among them are Representative Cliff Stearns, a Republican from Florida, proposed an amendment that would subject entertainers and other non-licensees who commit indecent acts on the air to fines of up to $100,000, and that would encourage broadcasters to adopt a code aiming at curbing off-color programming, a proposal that he and other lawmakers say they might want to extend to cable and satellite television. Representative Jean Green, a Democrat from Texas, advocated passing along 90% of a fine for a network-originated indecency from the affiliate to the network. Representative Edward Markley, a Democrat from Massachusetts, proposed to base indecency fines on a broadcaster's financial wherewithal, with the understanding that a levy could reach up to 10% of the station's annual revenues. Let me explain a little bit about that. Basically, what that's saying is that the fines would be a lot larger for these stations that make a lot of money and a lot smaller for the little mom-and-pop radio station down the street. Representative Heather Wilson, a Republican from New Mexico, proposed to require the FCC to treat instances of indecency as a serious violation of a station's public interest obligation at license renewal time. Personal note here, I give a big yawn. They don't seem to be doing much with public interest these days anyways. To make it easier for consumers to document indecency complaints, Representative Bobby Rush, a Democrat from Illinois, proposed an amendment that would require broadcasters to keep recordings of all their programming for 180 days. Another of his amendments would extend the ban on indecent programming to gratuitous violence that is detrimental to the health and safety of children. And just a personal note here, I have no problem with stations maintaining a recording of their broadcast. In fact, Canada used to do it for many, many years. Representative Albert Wynn, a Democrat from Maryland, proposed an amendment that would force the FCC to hold license revocation proceedings for any broadcaster that amasses 3 indecency violations. Good for you, Albert. After the vote, Subcommittee Chairman Fred Upton, a Republican from Michigan, predicted to reporters that the bill would be approved by Congress and on President Bush's desk by the end of March. Enough is enough for some of this stuff, Representative Upton said. We want to do something about it, and so does the public. Some DX Audio Service members have asked if they could voice an opinion on what is going on as far as indecency on the air or just some of the violations. In fact, I heard a very interesting comment by one of our members. He said he's been listening to C-SPAN and listening to all the news reports about this indecency issue. And he says, did you notice that it's all the big corporate broadcasters that are in trouble and none of the mom-and-pop localized radio stations? Good point. But if you would like to voice your opinion, if one of these representatives is in your district, please contact them and tell them how you feel and what you think the law should read as far as if a station gets caught for indecent programming. Also, if you hear indecent programming, here's what I suggest you do. If you hear something on the air that you don't quite agree with, perhaps a slip of the tongue or just a failing to meet the public interest, drop the radio station, preferably a letter. I don't send anything by email to radio stations whatsoever. It's always by letter. And I send it to the station's public file, care of radio station, whatever their call sign is, address, city, state, zip. And I detail the date, the time, and the instance of which I speak. I also sign the letter. Anonymous letters are rejected. They're just simply tossed away. So maybe you vented, but it meant nothing. But before you send that letter to the broadcaster, make a couple copies of it and send the letter to your congressman and perhaps the mayor of your city and let them know how you feel the station is doing to meet the public need. I would also send a copy of that letter to the Federal Communications Commission's Mass Media Bureau and put it to the attention of radio stations, their call sign, file. And that gives the FCC a heads up about what is going on. One member asked about recordings, and the recordings are very, very good to document that sort of thing. However, when you do record a station, be sure that you make light of what day, date, and time the recording was started, so there is a clear timeline. Also, be sure that your recording is as pristine as possible, no DX, and send that to the Federal Communications Commission with a letter of complaint. Unless you think that I'm the only one that's a little bit nervous about what is going on the air, here's John Bowker.
Well, thanks, Fred. Hello again, everybody. This is John Bowker, and what a difference a month can make. Do you remember that I played for you an ID at the end of the travelogue segment of the audio service last month, an ID from WFLA, and I told you what a great job Clear Channel is doing in the Tampa Bay region? Well, what I wasn't prepared for was that one of the FM stations here that's owned by Clear Channel this month has been advised of an apparent fine they face for an outrageous program. In fact, outrageous programs is more accurate. Some 26 of them, all broadcast by one disc jockey. It's the largest fine ever imposed by the FCC, $750,000 for this idiot's continued use of foul language and depicting all kinds of bodily functions, apparently all of them. And it was done after the station had been warned about an earlier incident with this same disc jockey. And all his miserable words were broadcast during morning drive time. Simply no excuse. And the defense? Oh, well, listeners don't have to tune to that station if they don't like what they hear. How embarrassing. How on earth can a radio station, a company like Clear Channel, face an advertiser on the one hand and tell listeners to go listen to some other station on the other? How can they avoid the fact that young listeners will hear this junk and naturally assume if a broadcaster is saying it, they can too? I'm sick about it. Thanks, Fred.
Me too, John. Well, on the other side of the coin, an article in the Denver Post by media critic Joanne Ostro titled, "Spare the Regulation, Congress Needs to Clean Up Its Own Act." Fired by the lewd Super Bowl halftime display on CBS, some members of Congress are ready to bleep everything that they don't like on the tube, including cable. Cheering them on are family value activists who want to regulate everything on television, even though cable and satellite television are currently exempt from federal indecency rules. They know a hot culture war issue when they see one. The saber rattling continued on Wednesday with back-to-back hearings in the House and Senate. Senate Commerce Committee Chairman John McCain, a Republican from Arizona, led the charge, saying that he's so offended by what he sees that he backs regulation on cable and satellite TV programming. Somehow, celibacy in the city doesn't have the same ring. Let's review. The Federal Communications Commission has the power to censor racy language since the dawn of radio, when it began handing out station licenses to operate on the scarce broadcast frequencies. In the 1930s, the agency targeted the words damned and by God. In 1970, it went after a radio station that broadcast an interview with Grateful Dead guitarist Jerry Garcia that included some racy language. Groping for a definition, the FCC said indecency is a language that is patently offensive and measured by contemporary community standards and wholly without redeeming social value. 5 years later, with George Carlin's satirical Seven Dirty Words case, the FCC amended that to say artistic value doesn't matter. In 1978, the Supreme Court upheld this vague indecency standard, particularly if the language was aired when children might be listening. In the years since, according to a lawyer and historian, Marjorie Hines, head of the National Coalition Against Censorship, the FCC commissioners have used their free-floating indecency standards to censor counterculture issues, sexual discussions, and language that reflects a sensibility different from their own. Yet the FCC's censorship power would be immediately, if not recognized as unconstitutional, if the medium weren't broadcasting. Certain right-wing advocacy groups smell blood in the water since Janet Jackson's Flashdance. On Wednesday, the Parents Television Council argued on behalf of parents who eventually are powerless before their TV sets. The cable industry needs to voluntarily adopt broadcast decency standards and to offer a unbundled subscription package so families can make viewing decisions based on their own personal values, said PTC President Brent Basel. Parents should not be forced to pay for MTV's graphic and offensive programming in order to provide their children with the positive message and safe harbor of the Disney or Discovery channels. Okay, sell a family tier of cable channels, promote the channel lockout feature, restore the family hour, when the airwaves would be free of indecent material early in the evening when children are presumably watching, and to use delays on live broadcasting. Just steer clear of content regulation. Senator John Brudeau, a Democrat from Louisiana, who apparently was not aware that cable content is not regulated by the government, said, "We ought to look at the whole spectrum of what we get over our televisions." Thankfully, FCC Chairman Michael Powell remembered that the courts have ruled that cable and satellite companies enjoy free speech protections more akin to newspapers. In the end, FCC Commissioner Michael Copps remains the voice of reason, noting the TV industry should clean up its own act instead of tempting the heavy-handed government to get involved.
Here's an article from the Washington Times entitled "Low-Tech Radio Entering Digital World." Radio is taking another step to shake its low-tech image and enter the digital world. Columbia-based Ubiquity Digital Corporation said the first receiver designed to pick up digital signals that are beamed by a small but growing number of radio stations will soon be shipped to an electronics store in Iowa. Digital radio is a significant technological improvement over the analog signals radio stations have beamed since the industry's birth because it eliminates static from AM and FM broadcasts. Ubiquity is the only company licensed to develop the technology that lets radio stations broadcast digitally, and about 300 of the nation's 13,450 radio stations are beaming music and news in both analog and digital stream. But it didn't matter because consumers couldn't buy the receivers to pick up the digital signals until now. I think you can say this is the last component, Ubiquity Chief Executive Robert Struble said. Kenwood, Panasonic, and JVC are all developing receivers for cars. Onkyo will make a receiver for home stereo systems. Kenwood's receiver goes on sale soon. Shipment of the receivers is an important development for Ubiquity and for radio, which has remained unchanged since the introduction of FM radio in 1961. Ubiquity formed in 2000, and it persuaded the Federal Communications Commission in 2002 to approve its technology that allows radio stations to beam analog and digital radio signals simultaneously. Digital radio will make AM sound like FM, FM sound like music from a compact disc, Mr. Struble said. That improvement comes with a cost. The Kenwood receiver will sell for about $349. It attaches to a car's existing stereo. Panasonic's digital receiver, which will resemble a standard car stereo and won't have to attach to an existing device, will cost an estimated $800. Mr. Strubel predicted the cost won't deter serious music lovers. Radios have been sold at that price for years, Mr. Strubel said, and he predicted consumer electronics manufacturers will sell tens of thousands of tuners this year. Ubiquiti has agreements with manufacturers that provide it with a share of revenue from each receiver sold, but Mr. Strubel declined to divulge the terms of the contracts. Ubiquiti is negotiating with car makers to get digital radios included in new cars as original equipment. The radios aren't likely to be an option before the 2006 model year, Mr. Strubel said. Ford Motor Company is one of Ubiquiti's many investors, a sign that its radios will show up in Ford models one day. Other investors include 14 of the nation's largest radio broadcasters. Consumers aren't the only ones having to pay for digital radio equipment. Radio stations are spending about $5,000 each to license Ubiquiti's technology to beam signals. Consumers aren't the only ones having to pay for digital radio equipment. Radio stations are spending about $5,000 each to license Ubiquiti's technology to beam digital signals. They also have to buy new equipment, and the conversion from analog to digital has cost stations $50,000 to $200,000, said Dennis Wharton, spokesman for the National Association of Broadcasters. Despite the cost, many more stations are likely to invest in the technology and equipment to go digital, Mr. Wharton said. I think the industry is embracing it because of the sound quality improvement. In the Washington area, Howard University's WHUR has licensed the technology, so have public radio stations WETA and WAMU, Ubiquiti says. Ubiquiti isn't the only company pushing radio toward digital broadcasting. XM Satellite Radio and Sirius Satellite Radio market subscription radio services that also offer clear streams of digital music and news that are beamed from satellites. XM has said it has 1 million subscribers paying $9.99 a month for access to 101 channels. Sirius has 200,000 subscribers who pay $12.95 a month for access to 102 channels. Neither satellite radio service considers Ubiquiti a direct competitor, even though an increasing number of radio stations are beaming digital radio signals. Local radio still has too many commercials, repeats too many songs, and can't beam signals far enough to keep people from subscribing to satellite radio, XM spokesman Chance Peterson said. Ubiquiti is just as confident that local radio is as vital as ever. An estimated 250 million people listen to terrestrial radio each day, and U.S. consumers own 800 million radios, Mr. Strubel stated. I don't think anyone is viewing satellite radio as the death of AM and FM. XM has 1 million subscribers. Even if they hit 5 million or 10 million subscribers, that would be a fantastic success, but it's hardly a dent in radio, he stated. Reporting for the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, I'm Bill Hale.
Thanks, Bill. And now let's take a look at our CPC test calendar. For the month of March, we have four tests to report, and they include on Sunday, March the 14th, 2004, WTOP 1500 in Washington, D.C. will conduct a DX test from midnight until 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, this test will consist of WTOP's regular all-news format. The station identifies frequently. The test will be run at WTOP's full power of 50,000 watts and will switch to the daytime directional antenna pattern for the duration of the test. Reception reports may be sent to WTOP Radio, 3400, that's 3400 Idaho Avenue, Northwest NW, Washington, D.C., 20016. Also on March the 14th, which is Sunday, KEVA 1240 in Evanston, Wyoming will conduct the DX test from midnight until 1 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. That's 2 o'clock until 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time for those of us out here. This test will consist of numerous Morse code IDs, and also many thanks go out to Doug Smith, W9WI, for creating the CD. Reception reports with return postage may be sent to Mr. Michael Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, K-E-V-A-A-M, Post Office Box 190, Evanston, Wyoming, 82931. Also, we have a DX test on March the 29th, which is Monday, from WXHL 1550 in Elkton, Maryland. This test will be run from midnight 01 to 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we also understand that WRIB 1220 in Providence, Rhode Island will be testing at least through the month of March from 2:55 a.m. to 3:05 a.m. with some kind of Morse code IDs. Remember, what you may be hearing as Monday will actually be Sunday night. And if you try for or hear any of these tests, please drop the station a note and let them know that you appreciate them doing a CPC test for us. And if you'd like to contact Lynn Hollerman, who has arranged these tests, please contact Lynn at lynn@eatel.net. And Tim Hendel, I'll try to get you a snail mail address for Lynn. I don't have it at the present time, but those are our CPC tests for this month on the DX Audio Service. On our next edition of the DX Audio Service, I'd like you to do me a favor. Now, before you all break into a sweat and wonder what I'm going to ask you to do, I'd just like you to do this. Give us a call on the action line at 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day. It's a machine. And just tell us a little bit about yourself. It's our anniversary edition next month. How many years have we been doing this? Many, I can tell you. But we'd like to find out a little bit about our members, and I'm sure that other people will find it very interesting as well. So just give us a call. Keep it very brief and to the point, because we want to make sure we can get as many calls on as possible. So if you can keep it 30 to 45 seconds, that'd be great. And just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're calling from, who you are, what you do for a living, what your hobbies are, how you got into this wide, wonderful, wacky world of radio, and, you know, maybe just a little bit about what your hobbies are like. I mean, are you a serious DXer? Are you looking for exotic DX from the Turks and Caicos Islands, or are you just an air check freak where you like to record the stations on the air, or perhaps you like collecting jingles, you like to hear technical articles? Just tell us about it, okay? Just give us a call on the action line and tell us all about it. Something else I'd like to tell you about, and that is the convention, which is going to be coming up over Labor Day. And again, I'd like to stress that I need your input as soon as possible. I'd like to get it by the 5th of March. And you can either just give me a call on the telephone, or you can give me a letter or an email and just briefly tell me what date would work the best for you for the convention. We're thinking about moving it up. And this is due basically to the fact that Labor Day falls late this year, and there's going to be some people that won't be able to attend because they've got other commitments. In fact, if it's on the actual Labor Day this year, Debbie and the kids won't be able to come to the convention with me. So we're kind of experimenting around here with moving this convention date, because it's been a problem in the last couple of years, and we'd like to get some input from the membership. So just let us know again by the 5th, because we have to turn it into the board of directors by the 8th. So give us some leeway there in being able to tally our results. Well, before we skedaddle off here, I just have a little treat for you. A song that may just appear on WNRC. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.
Softly smile, I know she must be kind.